Today will be a fun show. We got two young folk, far, far younger than you. And they are the co-founders of a marketing shop called Unexpected Ways. So welcome David Tendrich and Lou Levitt.
Hi, thank you.
Well, first of all, tell us, oh, by the way, audience, we're not going to interview them individually. We're going to have a four-way roundtable. So, but first of all, tell us a little bit about the company and how you got started.
Well, I've always been very passionate about writing. It's always been something throughout my whole life I've done just sort of naturally. And Lou has been very into graphic design ever since she was in high school.
And art.
And art her whole life. And we decided a while ago, I had a guitar lessons business when I was in college. And I really enjoyed just advertising it and marketing it. I loved writing these ads and studying salesmanship in print and creating these ads. And then all of a sudden, I would hand them to Lou, and she would just make them incredible with her text formatting and design. And we kind of decided, like, hey, you know, and they got a great response. We said, you know what, this is maybe something we could do in the future. And then he was actually, what ended up happening is someone caught wind of how many clients I was getting off of Craigslist with these ads for the guitar lessons business, and asked me to write a blog post for their marketing blog. And people just started naturally coming to us and asking us, hey, can you do that for me too? Can you help me market on Craigslist? And it just took off from there.
Well, you tell the audience your whole life, in quotes. you tell the audience how old you guys are.
We're 21 and 22.
Right, right. So you don't have clearly the length of years that Stone has. why aren't you guys in school?
Well, we were both in school for about 2 years, and school was very stressful for me personally, because I'm kind of a perfectionist. So, and the workload that they gave me was pretty insane.
At graphic design school.
Yeah. So, and also a lot of the things that they taught I'd already known before, and I just didn't feel like it was really advancing me in the direction that I wanted to go in.
Yeah. And for me, I mean, when I knew that I really enjoyed advertising copywriting and that's what I wanted to do, I looked through the course catalog for something to help me. And the closest I could come to was like creative poetry classes, which I love. I love writing poetry and stuff, but there was really nothing about owning your own business in college. It's more if you'd like to get a marketing job in a gig that's already been up for years or something. And so we kind of said, well, what are we doing? Why don't we just keep going with our own thing?
Well, let me say right out of the box, you are the most attractive Lou that I've ever come across. Let me just get that out right now. I wonder, I just got back from Pensacola, Florida, where I was raised, and I spent the weekend with my parents, and I'm trying to envision myself walking into the kitchen and saying, Mom, Dad, I'm dropping out of school because I'm going to start a marketing business. And I don't know if it would be Dad backhanding me or Mom running off and crying. Did you guys go through that at all? Did you get some pressure, some pushback from friends, family?
I know when I dropped out, there was nobody other than David who was, you know, supportive of it. My mom, she was supportive eventually because she's more open about stuff like that. But you got that right.
Oh yeah. I had everyone and their mother trying to talk me out of it.
My grandma offered me money to go back to school.
Nice.
Yeah. But we knew. We just knew it wasn't for us. And as our family has found out, spending 21 and 22 years with us, when we get an idea in our head, it's hard to shake us from it. So eventually they kind of backed off, and as they've seen what we've done with our business, mm-hmm. and for ourselves and for other people, they take us very seriously now.
It's,
well, you know, I got 2 degrees and graduated from Florida State. And I don't regret that experience. And like any young man in college, I had a good time. But the success I've had in business over all these years was not because of the education I got. Everything I've achieved, everything I've learned has been because I've got my hands dirty and just dove in and figured it out. And I don't know that I would do it any differently if I was in your old shoes. I mean, the way the world's working now with the internet and the tools that are available and the communication that's available, I just don't know that your dad's probably going to be pissed when I say this, but I don't, you know, I going to college didn't do anything for me. I mean, right. what I've achieved in my career is just because I went out and learned it.
But college or no college, and you know, in deference to what these folks are saying, the percentages really were on their side. I mean, a lot of businesses, and I don't know what the numbers are, but I know they're ugly. A lot of businesses fail and fail early. Why do you think you guys were able to pull it off and are able to have something under your feet that seems to be working?
Well, we really love what we do. And I think when you love what you do so much and you want to make a change with it, both in your life and for other people, I think you're going to push to make it happen, and you're going to push to make yourself succeed.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of that. And also, we, like, almost every day of the week, even when on days we say, okay, we're going to take a break today, we take at least some kind of action to get to that'll take us closer to our goals. So we'll write a radio station. We'll write we'll look through the newspaper for prospective clients. We'll do something. We'll just look for one little action we can take to help grow our business and get us going in the direction we wanna go, which is just bigger and better, and helping more people and helping ourselves in the process. So I think it's like. That I mean, we really love what we do. We do it like, I mean, sometimes with a lot of projects, we're like, cool. I mean, like you were saying with this thing, Birmingham, was
yeah,
it? Yeah,
uh-huh.
You could, you know, you got paid for it too. Like,
right.
It was fun. Yeah, like we feel the same way. It's a little cool. Thank you. Yeah, do you know I would have done this for free? You know, it's that kind of.
It's okay to have fun doing your job,
right.
and frankly, it shouldn't be called a job if it's fun. It's a vocation. It's just, you know, Stone and I mean. We always joke that, you know, doing this radio show, it's a hard day at the office.
Yeah, I know.
You know, all right, so I have to assume that you've encountered this in your approach and reaching out to prospects when they say, let me set a scenario. Let's say it's a 45-year-old ex-Coke exec who started a business and written a book, and he says, well, I would love to talk to you guys, but I just don't know that you have any experience with which to bring to bear. How do you address that challenge, which I'm assuming you've gotten?
We did encounter that challenge very, very early when we started. We had someone who came to us who he was on board. He believed in us, but or at least this was the story he gave us. He was on board, but his partner.
Oh yeah, the old my partner.
Oh, the my partner
right.
Routine. I use that with Stone all the time.
I could see that. I could definitely see that. But he said, so my partner though is worried that you guys don't have enough experience, and so I at this time I'd already read every copywriter and his brother's book, and I'm sure you guys have heard of David Ogilvy. And anyways, one of the things that David Ogilvy's book, I noticed they did this campaign for a rental car company, which was the number two company in America, and that's they played that to their advantage, and all the ads were about how this company was the number two, but why that makes them better than the number one. They don't have the longer lines, they pay more attention to the customers and this and that. And so I said, you know what, I told them, you're right, we don't have as much experience as these other guys. But I said, that means every job we get right now, our business's survival depends on it. And so we're going to work our butts off to do everything in our power, because if we do good for you, then that is one step closer for other people feeling comfortable coming to us just like you have. And so we're going to make sure you get results. And you know, like big agency doesn't have that kind of heat. They don't have that kind of pressure. Or someone who has a ton of clients and is already well established, they don't have the same kind of urgency. So, I mean... I said, you're our priority. We're going to get it done.
I think that's a marvelous response. And I'm sure it's true, too. I think that's a great way to answer that question.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
I also think it's, hey, I'm unburdened by 20 years of experiences that jade me and, right. and guide me into a path.
Yeah.
And I bring a fresh perspective.
And I don't have 1 year of experience 20 times over.
Right.
Which is right. Sometimes you run into a little bit of that is too. So talk to us a little bit about what a project might look like. What are some of the kinds of things that you're out there doing for folks?
We do a lot of like branding, logos, and other various print advertising or design stuff, websites, new copywriting, David does. And marketing plans for people.
Yeah. Up until now, a lot of our focus has been on what's called direct response marketing, which basically means I'm sure a lot of your listeners already know this, but it basically, just for the ones who don't, I'm not trying to insult the ones who do, but it basically means when we put out a piece of advertising, we want someone to respond to it right then and there. And our goal is to get someone to call that number, click the buy now button, mail in a check, whatever it is, that's our goal is to get a response right then and there.
And any design or copy that goes into any project is geared toward that. So it's not just out of the blue. I mean, a lot of research goes into it and a lot of thought and preparation.
Well, it's funny that you use the phrase direct response, because you don't really hear that uttered a lot these days. I mean, it's all this online. I mean, when I started my company, I was a direct mail guy. So I mean, direct response was my business, too. You just don't hear a lot of people talking about it anymore, let alone 21 and 22-year-olds. So, give us a couple examples. I mean, have you done direct mail, or is it largely more online?
Yeah, we actually, I think it was a few months ago, we did a direct mail campaign for a spiritual author. And we had mailed a bunch of Unity churches, which are basically non-denominational churches. And we had sent them a letter about her book. And from that letter, she got a lot of speaking gigs, and they wanted to get to buy her book, and they wanted to get to know her. So, and she was an unknown author.
Yeah.
So it was really good. We got really good results
right.
from that.
Right. The cool thing was later we actually visited one of these churches, and we saw the guy. He had this whole giant stack of books on his desk, and I said, what are all these books? Like, he said, these are the books people send us to review, and I kind of realized like right then and there that it was really cool that this letter that we created to help her market her book, it got ahead of these other ones. It got like we got responses, yeah, and I sort of realized right there, I was like, wow, we pat ourselves on the back, that's pretty cool.
So what are some common mistakes that you guys see organizations make when they try to take on marketing in general or something specific like a direct response effort or some other type of campaign? Do you see some patterns, some mistakes that you see over and over and over?
I think in general, one of the biggest problem is trying to be too clever. One of the things we do is our biggest focus is to appeal to people emotionally, because most of the decisions we make come from an emotional place in some sort. And a lot of different advertising we've seen is kind of, it's too clever.
So it's a cute YouTube video or it wins an award, but doesn't necessarily sell batteries.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, advertising is very simple. It's just, company A has a solution. Like if it's business to consumer, company has a solution. Consumer has a problem, and all advertising is the bridge between them that lets them know they have found this. That lets the consumer know they found the solution to their problem. And it's very simple. I think a lot of companies do overcomplicate it, or It's not focused on what the consumer actually wants. It might be focused on what they think the consumer wants, or just doesn't successfully make that connection because it's very overcomplicated.
Yeah, a lot of my clients come to the table and they think, all right, well, here's what I'm thinking, and I have this intricate, multi-level, complicated schematic of this plan that they've engineered, and they're like, is this right? You know, and I say, oh no, let's start over. I do a lot of writing on what I call minimalist marketing. It's stripping away all this crap and all this clutter and this convoluted message. It is stripped down to a very simple message. And you're right, Lou. It is, people buy on emotions. And so, in my opinion, marketing is telling stories that push emotional buttons.
Yeah.
That's really all it is. A lot of subsets to that, but that's really just, you know, stripped down. And, you know, Stone, we were talking about our client in Birmingham. I mean, these guys sell control panels and for system integration.
I mean, oh, very sexy stuff. Yeah,
you know, but that's what we're doing for these guys is we're using this army of how should I say this? Okay, I'm saying it lovingly. Geeks, engineering geeks, who are doing amazing things and doing wonderful service for their customers. We're helping them tell emotional stories about engineering.
Right.
You know, and so and that was my biggest question going into this project, was that possible? And it is.
Well, yeah, that's a question I wanted to ask. I've heard in this conversation so far the design, the visual element, the copywriting. Are you guys playing with any other media at all, like audio or video? Have you dabbled in that at all?
So far we've only kind of dabbled with that for ourselves. And maybe guiding people on how to set things up, in terms of like the setting of their videos, that kind of thing. But we haven't actually done a lot of that.
Yeah. We have done a good amount of consulting with people who said, hey, what do I put in my video? And,
right.
I mean, it's the same thing as writing a sales letter or anything. It's just a different way of communicating it. But yeah, video, audio, I mean, yeah, but like we said, mostly in consulting at this point.
But setting up the video, like you described, I know, I mean, that's very important because when someone goes to the page and there's video there, nowadays they may very well decide that they're going to click on it, but they're so inundated, maybe they won't unless there's also very captivating copy or it's got a very fresh look to it as well.
Sure.
So tell us some of your favorite stories, some projects that have been particularly fun for you or that you feel like really generated some kick-ass results.
Do you want to go ahead?
Well, one of, I think, a really great project we had, we worked with a chiropractor in California. And
yeah, this is actually the guy I was just mentioning a minute ago who
about my partner's worried about you.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Got it.
So this is the part two at what ended up happening.
So we ended up creating a newspaper ad for him, a full page ad, for a service that's not covered by insurance that was pretty expensive. And the first time they ran the ad in the newspaper completely destroyed the ad. It was almost illegible.
Yeah.
But He told us that he still got more calls than he normally did from that ad. And then the next week that they ran it, I think he got like double the calls, right?
Oh no, actually the first week it's not that he got more calls, it's just that he was amazed that he got a response and actually still profited from it. And then the second week he got something like 30 calls within a couple of days, and it led to a lot of business for him for that and just prospects who he could call on in the future for the people who didn't qualify for the treatment at that time.
And his response also was much more targeted from the actual people that he was trying to appeal to as opposed to from a broader.
Yeah, but it was, I mean, that was just cool because as we were talking to this chiropractor, he was telling us these stories about these people who had often been in back pain for decades, literally like 10, 20, 30, 40 years in pain. And then they came and got this treatment and they were good within a couple of months. And not only that, but like his goal as a chiropractor was to make it so people never had to come back to him. So, and I thought that was cool because
very different positioning than you're used to seeing from a chiropractor.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, you think of chiropractors they kind of have a bad rap in some ways. You think they're just trying to scam you, or they just want you to keep coming in for more and more. But that was cool. So he definitely had a very unique story to tell. And it was pretty much just a matter of getting out of the way and letting this stuff shine through.
But the thing about that story that struck me was it wasn't some fancy Twitter campaign. It wasn't this complicated online strategy. It was a newspaper.
Yeah.
And it goes what we're saying. If you simplify the message and you hit the right emotional button, it still can generate response.
And the ad was actually, it looked like a newspaper article. It didn't look like a typical advertisement you'd see in the newspaper.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, and people say, who's going to read all that text, especially this day and age?
Right. Especially on like a giant full page.
Yeah, it was, you know, something that it's a few thousand words of copy. But then in doing research and reading, people have been asking that question for I don't know, ever since advertising's been around, who's going to read all that text? But if someone has back pain and they think something in that ad could help them, they're going to read every single word of it to get out of that back pain. It's I mean, if you get the right message.
Especially if you create the right environment for them. I think, like, the biggest thing in what we do is we want to... Advertising creates an experience for people. It's not just, like, an ad or text. It's an experience that you want someone to go into and really be enveloped in and really create a comfortable environment for them to get a solution to their problem.
Yeah, I mean, like, Todd, it's exactly how you're saying with stories. And in fact, like, that the way we planned that ad, half of it was a story, and then half of it was just kind of describing the treatment. But I totally agree with you on that. There's nothing more powerful than...
Last week I read a book by Chip and Dan Heath called Made to Stick, and the whole concept of the book was about how to make ideas and concepts memorable. And they started the book by telling this really amazing story, and you were so drawn into it, and you're mesmerized by it. And I can tell you, I could regurgitate the entire story to you, because it was just something that was so memorable and odd and unique. And then the book kind of explains why that phenomenon happens. But then they gave another example of a very technical delivery, full of details and specs, and, well, we can reduce your percentages by X percent and bit and bit. And I said, I guarantee you in a week you won't remember this set of content at all. And they're right. That's the whole key to this thing, making it work. So, yeah. You guys have a project that you're just launching, or I think just launched, called The Revolution. Mm-hmm. Tell the audience a little bit about that project.
Well, this idea was kind of born, you know, all around us. We've heard, when we hear all the time, there's a bad economy, and this idea for us was kind of born from a place of believing that it doesn't matter the state of the economy, there's always going to be something to hold you back. So we want to encourage people to dream big again, and not to kind of settle for things that they think they're supposed to want or have.
Yeah, it's just kind of, I mean, we're not oblivious. We realize people have lost their jobs, right, and many businesses have closed, but there's always, regardless of the economy, there's always been businesses that have closed. There's always been people who have lost jobs, and maybe it's more right now, but there's always, like, we feel that there's, regardless of what's going on, there's always a way to make what you want to happen. And it's just a matter of maybe finding out how. Maybe with a different economy, it just means changing up your strategy, or it just means taking a new approach. And so what this revolution is all about is helping people see, hey, you really still can, you know, that thing you've been dreaming your whole life that you want to do, you really can do it. And then, so it's to inspire them on that one hand. And then on the other hand, we're giving away 100 free marketing consultations to actually get people started and give them a plan that they can take to really get it done and actually do it.
And also to inspire them to create a change around themselves and their own community with their own sort of revolution.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, our theory is just that energy, when people are just doing what they love, is contagious. And so we think if we can infect enough people, it might cause a great epidemic.
So what's the plan for pulling that off? I mean, you'll share that on radio shows and some of your own marketing, and you're providing these pro bono consultations up front to do that. Anything else you've got going that's to help you execute this and pull it off?
Yeah, sure. We have on our website, there's a whole page dedicated to it, and we created a video for it.
Oh, cool.
We're also working with some people in the Atlanta area who have large lists, and we'll be through their email list letting people know about it, and just... who, you know, just as we meet business owners,
yeah,
you seem like
getting,
a good fit.
Just getting in front of a lot of people.
So you're finding people with spheres of influence and then getting the message to them, and then and then they're relaying it to their community.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Nice. Yes. I like it. Yes. That's terrific. A little while ago, we touched on something. We didn't really quite dive into it that I have a question about, because it enters into our world all the time. And it's this question about return on investment, ROI. A, do you get the question like we do in our arena? And I'm almost certain the answer to that is yes. And how do you handle it? What do you tell people when they start asking questions around ROI with respect to the campaigns and stuff that you're going to do with them?
Sure, sure. I mean, I think that that's a great question, and I think it's something that in talking to clients, we can't ignore that if that question comes up, because it's a very valid objection that people may have to working with any kind of advertisers or marketers at all. And what I tell people is first, I think it kind of stems in most people from a fear that they'll lose money and they'll have made a big mistake, or maybe that losing that money will lead to all these other things. And so the first thing I do is generally I'll address that fear and I'll say, you know, there is a chance that it's not going to work out. I mean, 9 times out of 10, we see great results for our clients. But of course, there's that 1 out of 10 where you could have the perfect message and everything's just right, but for whatever reason, it's, you know, you plan the baseball game and it rains, or it just something happens. And I say, but on the other hand, we have seen really amazing results for a lot of people. And after talking to you and listening to you, we really do believe we can help you. We only work with people who we feel we can help, or who we feel passionate about helping. So I want to leave it in their court. I feel that just giving them both sides of the story, they can, a lot of times they'll say like, cool, let me sit on it. But when they come back, they're gung ho about it, because they've kind of confronted their fear about it and dealt with it. And then they've come back to us really ready to get started and really ready to see some results. And
I think in general, a really good thing any business can do is never shy away from any objections that anyone may have about their business, but instead address them right up front, because and give reasons why you should still work with them. Because we notice, like in a lot of advertising, objections are a lot of times are just ignored. And when objections are ignored, they stir up in people's minds on their own.
Maybe even grow if they're unaddressed, right?
Right. So when you right off the bat come out with all the objections and you give them answers, it kind of lets the person keep reading without stirring up all these things in their mind.
You know, we saw that Friday. We were working with a partner in a session that we were doing. One of the things I loved about what he did is he sort of made fun of the whole "you don't understand, we're different" mentality. And that was like his second slide. You know, like at 7:30 in the morning, he made fun of it. And what it did, it took the teeth out of that argument. And so all through the day, you might have people kind of teasing, and they might say, "Well, you don't understand, we're different," but they would laugh it off. But it took the teeth out of that argument, so they could get some real value out of stuff, even though maybe they did have to meld it, mold it, make it their own. So that's a
It was a great tactic. I don't even mind, and I've had success with saying, "I don't know how to overcome that problem that you're speculating." I feel most of the time the things we worry about never happen anyway. But I don't know the answer to that question, sir. Let's figure it out together. And now that I'm aware that it's something that's on your mind, let's tackle it and figure the thing out. You know,
some of the things I worry about working with him actually do happen. Just to set the record straight. Just want to be clear about that.
Yeah. I think that's great. I think like that kind of honesty and transparency is great. And I mean, if it's better than changing the subject, you know, or
right. And then do you either ask the client, or do you offer up some sort of schematic for tracking results from the campaign? Is that part of what you set in motion?
Sure. If they want to, like if it's a website, we can set up analytics for them on Google so they can track click-through rates and how many people are coming onto the site, and they can compare how many people versus how many people signed up or contacted or ordered. And then from there you can get a conversion rate. Most of the time though, if it's something like the advertisement is just prompting people to call in, and they don't want to set up a separate phone number, the easiest way is to just set up a separate phone number, because then you can
really, really try it.
Yeah. But otherwise we'll just have them ask their customers when they call in, where did you hear about us, or where did you get the word from us? And if they say Craigslist or your website or this and that, then they'll keep track. And they're always, I mean, people are excited to let you know. So they'll say, "Hey, I got like 20 people this month who called in from the Craigslist ad," or, you know, so it's, I think We'll do everything in our, if businesses want to test and track, we love that. We're all about it, and we'll do everything in our power. I think a lot of times, though, people, as long as clients are coming in and the phone's ringing, they don't really care. Like, right. It's like, okay, cool.
Well, the best ROI is real profits.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We talked earlier about the slower economy. There are a lot of businesses out there struggling. What if you could give them one piece of advice that would inspire them? What would that be?
I think take action. That's really the main thing. Take any action. As long as you keep taking action, something will happen.
Yeah, it's very, very easy to get paralyzed when you, mm-hmm. maybe if you have friends who they're doing worse than ever, or they've even closed their businesses, or if you have family members who this has happened to, it's very easy to kind of have this sense of impending doom of, oh crap, I'm next, you know. But I think if you can just kind of, I don't know, it's kind of like an objection rather than just try to ignore that. If you can address that fear head on and just say, you know what, there is a chance I could, but why don't I try something, and just take some kind of action, reach out to people, go to events, try to get a speaking gig at in front of people who maybe have the problem you mm-hmm. solve, you might be surprised that something really good could come out of it.
Taking action is a great answer. I mean, the only way to get momentum is to start moving.
Right.
So no, that's great.
So if I'm a small business person and I'm thinking about making an investment to get some genuine professional marketing support, a couple of questions. One, what are some of the criteria? What am I looking for in a firm like yours? What kind of questions should I be asking? What am I looking out for that is a red flag and says, okay, don't want to fool with these people, stuff like that?
Sure. You know, rather than questions you should be asking, I would look for the questions they'd be asking you. Research is literally 90. I mean, in some projects, 90 to 95%.
Yeah, I mean, we spend weeks researching our clients. They're talking, interviewing their clients, their competitors, their industry. Really, kind of immersing ourselves in what they do. So, if you're working with a company and they don't do that and they don't ask you questions, how are they really creating advertising for
you? That's I would say that's a red flag. If they don't want to immediately set up a long phone call with you to really get to know you and your business and what makes you unique out of all the other businesses in the same field, that would be the first one.
Another red flag is if they always just agree with you.
Yes.
They don't ever challenge.
Yeah. Because there are a lot of or I've seen even a lot of just designers who always agree with their clients and just do what their clients want for whatever reason, because they're afraid to say no. Even if they know for a fact that it's going to destroy the project. And I've had clients tell me things, you know, change this or change that. You know, I would want something this way or that way. And I can't do that. I mean, I'm not going to do that to myself or to my client.
Yeah. I mean, and, Most of the time, I think clients just they really appreciate that. Occasionally, we have some people who we have to kind of wrestle with them, and then we have people who we've just told, you know, I think maybe there's another designer, another copywriter, another
better
group
suited.
Who's better suited for you,
right?
And I mean, in rare cases, we've actually just given refunds and parted ways. But it's that's definitely important. Yeah. I mean, because like people, like a chiropractor, this guy's an expert chiropractor, but he's not necessarily an expert marketer. That's where we come in. So we can't, like, if you get expert chiropractor saying, hey, the advertisement needs to have this, I mean, that's like us telling him, hey, with your patients, you need to do this and this. And he would just probably, if we told him things like that, give us a look like, what are you, stupid or something? I'm the chiropractor here. You know? Well, we're the marketers here. And that's not to say we're closed off to suggestions or we don't want input, but, yeah, I mean, we're not. Yeah, some people do just kind of agree with the client because they're afraid of losing the client, which is understandable. But I think
that's helpful, though. I mean, I think that should be a real red flag, because mm-hmm. if they're not comfortable in their own skin and willing to stand their ground and at least let me know what the consequences of going down this path are, then you got to wonder, you know, is that really the caliber of person that you want giving you advice that's so critical to your business?
Sure.
Absolutely. So is there a story behind or a rationale behind this tagline of yours, Things Come Together? Or the name of your company, for that matter, which I found very unusual, unexpected ways things come together. Tell us about that.
Well, in our lives, I mean, throughout our whole lives, we've kind of found that things come to us and from really unexpected places in really unexpected ways. But somehow they always manage to kind of fall perfectly into the right place. The name of our company was born from that. And things come together. I mean, things come together. If you take action, if you, you know, if you follow your passion, if you face your fear and take a leap of faith anyway, things come together.
Well, leap of faith, you know, some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers. And so sometimes things don't happen for a good reason too, you know, so.
Right.
Do you get the sense that like step 8.5 in their methodology is get out of the way? And let this thing work. I mean, I get the sense that you probably tell the client that or somehow work that into the process, because I think a lot of times we just get in our own way on this stuff, don't we?
8.5B.
Right. Yes. We've already observed this at the top of the show, and I think you've mentioned it throughout the show. You know, our guests this morning are not very long in the tooth, but they've had tremendous success very early on. But even with that short tenure, I got to believe somewhere along the line, you've stumbled, fallen, had to dust yourself off and to pick yourself back up. We have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We like to ask our guests, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career and what they feel like they learned from it. And I wondered if we might get one or possibly even two of those out on the table for the benefit of our listeners and maybe help them avoid the same kind of pitfall.
How about 10?
We were actually looking forward to this question, I think, the most.
Yeah, Todd, in an email, Todd
gave
me,
you the heads up on it.
We've been thinking about it a lot. We've been talking about it. The biggest mistake that we've made in our business is early on, we partnered with these guys who are already very well established in a certain niche. And they liked what we had to offer. We were already providing them with really great content for their readers and helping to just bring more value to what they did. And since they were already so well established, there was always kind of this air in the relationship of they were doing us a favor, or there was definitely a power structure in the relationship, and we were on the bottom end of it. We were kind of initially, I mean, honestly, I think we were just kind of afraid to really say anything about it, even at times when we were made very uncomfortable by it, because we did get a lot of business through them. And it's kind of scary if there's a good source of business to mess with that. But eventually we just, when we had a written agreement and literally nothing on the agreement was adhered to, we said, okay, we have to do something. And so we made a stand and we wanted to work it through with them. Our main goal was just not to be perceived as we're having a favor done to us, but to be recognized for the value too that we provided them. It was absolutely a two-way street. We just felt they never saw it. And so I think just the biggest mistake was
compromising who we are and what we believe in and what we know to be true for a period of time out of fear that we will not be able to succeed on our own. And actually from that mistake, the best possible thing came out of it, which we completely stopped the relationship. It was scary, but it was a really wonderful experience. I mean, it felt so good.
It's very empowering.
To claim our power again and to be ourselves and not to compromise. And we will never, ever do that again.
Yeah. I mean, to look the giant in the eyes and say, hey, we're okay without you. We'd like to work with you. We'd like to work it out. But if you're not willing to, we understand. You guys have your own thing and we can just go our own ways. And it was pretty incredible experience to do that.
Things will work out in unexpected ways and they'll come together, you know? You never know.
Well, that had to be very liberating and had to be just a marvelous source of confidence from that point forward.
Yeah.
You're very gracious to share that experience with us and our listeners. We really appreciate that. So how can our listeners get in touch with you, learn more about your work, maybe get one of these pro bono consultations and If they have broken dreams, rebuild them. And if they haven't started dreaming yet, get a new lease on life.
Well, you can visit our website, which is www.unexpectedways.net. Do you want to spell that, David?
Yeah, sure. It's UnexpectedWays.net.
There's in the navigation up top, there's a button called Revolution. If you want to get in touch with us about the consultations, the free consultations, there's also just a contact form and a phone number on the homepage and on the contact page. Yeah. So
I love the Revolution idea, and I hope you give out like those red and black bandanas or something like that. That would be really cool. And how do you pronounce your last name, Dave?
Tendrich.
Tendrich.
Yes.
All right. Well, it has been an absolute pleasure having you both on the show, and I hope you'll come back sometime.
Oh, we'd love to. This has been a lot of fun. Yeah.
Well, until then, this is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick, Lee Cantor, David Tendrich, Lou Levitt, and everyone here at the Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.